Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Today we're excited to welcome author and researcher Dr. Richard Allen Miller to the show. Now, Dr. Miller's unique experience working in the secret world of naval intelligence has fueled his popular book series, including Power Tools for the 21st Century. His background as a physicist and teacher of metaphysics at Harvard has given his paranormal psychology a strong grounding in modern science. Now, today Dr. Miller will share his own understanding of ESP, brainwave training, telepathy, and the evolution of consciousness, and how it helped him to realize that humanity was at a crucial juncture and that we needed special tools in order to meet the challenge of hidden forces that are bent on world domination. You won't hear this in a TED Talk. Here we go. Dr. Richard Allen Miller, GMO Mind Control and Holographic Consciousness.
Does the NSA intercept Americans' cell phone conversations?
No.
Google searches?
No.
Text messages?
No.
Article in Wired magazine reported this month that a whistleblower formerly employed by the NSA has stated NSA signals intercepts include, quote, eavesdropping on domestic phone calls and inspection of domestic emails, end quote. Is that true?
No, not in that context. Not in that context.
They're going to bankrupt the country. They're going to discard it. And these corporations are using our countries like stepping stones.
You know, when we look at the work of a pioneer in the field of consciousness research like Dr. Richard Allen Miller, it's easy to see why the government used him for their covert projects in this special arena. Thankfully, in this critical time in our history, we have individuals like him who are willing to come forward and share their experience with us. It's important that we seize the moments and hear the great outpouring of wisdom and insight that's available to us with a simple choice: to watch and learn. So let's get started. Richard, it's great to have you on the show. I can't wait to dig into some of your more fascinating research. First, I wanted to mention, we're coming to you from Cambridge, and I understand that you have something of a history here.
Yep. I taught metaphysics at Harvard for almost 11 years in graduate school, but I did it from location here out of Grants Pass.
Oh, that's interesting.
Dr. Mack. Remember Dr. Mack?
Yes. Dr. Mack was the Harvard professor who wrote about the abduction phenomena. And I was actually fortunate enough to meet him on several occasions.
Yeah, he was one of my students. I was teaching graduate level metaphysics at Harvard. And Mack, even though he was dean of psychiatry, chose to take my class. And then he got interested in alien abductions. And what I told him was that there was probably no way he was ever going to prove the existence of God, but he could certainly treat the trauma. And all these people were traumatized. I was actually in Homestead when Elizabeth was abducted. I was on location at the time it happened and was a witness to how that all works.
Well, let's take a moment here to get your take on the alien abductions that witnesses are reporting. What do you think is happening in these cases?
I have my own ideas of what I think is going on. And while I don't think it's physical aliens coming in and doing little trips on you and things like that, but there's something very interesting about sleep, dreaming, and the fact that I see now similar schisms and breaks of reality with targeted individuals. There's different categories now where people, normal people, are experiencing paranormal.
Yeah.
And, you know, now, there is a thing in Africa. There's another collider called the Chanti Project. You can Google that up.
Now, this would be like the Large Hadron Collider at CERN, where they smash particles together just to see what happens.
Okay. And this one has come out with information saying they're getting a cipher code where it's a parallel universe is communicating to them because through the elementary particle studies they're doing. And what it's like, and I'm speaking in metaphor because we don't even understand what this means yet, is that like there's two universes that are going through each other in different concepts of space that we understand.
Yeah.
And some of people see things on that other universe, like a chupacabra.
Well, there is some research around these interface points where the dimensional fabric is really thin. And there are those cases where people have actually reported seeing these interdimensional entities. Like, I guess the most famous one would be at Skinwalker Ranch.
I do not know what Skinwalker Ranch is about.
Yeah.
But I've been to Skinwalker Ranch and seen these schisms or breaks. There is a writer, Alan Dean Foster. He lives out of Ashland. He did Outland and The Last Starfighter and Star Wars. He did a bunch of different books. One of the books he wrote was called Into the Out Of. And that book shows this African shaman watching a bunch of demons tumble out of a piece of space. They just, you know, like there's a slip in space-time.
That's so interesting. Well, I just want to take a moment here and say, you know, here we are just a few minutes in, and already you're dishing out the most fascinating ideas and scenarios. You know, that kind of psycho-spiritual analysis that you do is exactly the type of intellectual direction that I'm the most interested in.
What exactly does that mean? Spiritual, like something more going on than the physical plane?
Yes, exactly.
There is a movie called Astral City that I was fortunate to see 2 weeks before my father committed suicide. And Dad was in a lot of pain. He was part of the Neptune Club, so Dad had more balls than I did in the way he chose to exit. He didn't want to be a burden on anybody, and he was in pain, so he couldn't wait around for the Neptune Club to take him, and so he did it his way.
Yeah.
But the Astral City, I saw this video. It's Brazilian. That means it's in Portuguese with English subtitles, and it's written by Xavier Chola, who is a Nobel Prize winner, a philanthropist out of Brazil. And it's a generic religious overview of what might be happening at the moment of death.
Uh-huh.
And the movie starts out with a doctor watching himself die on an operating table. We've got code blue, da-da-da-da-da, and he's watching himself die. And then, at the moment of his death, that's where the movie starts in terms of what happens next. Now, basically, in the movie, we'll get there in a minute. He's got his head underwater in a muddy water, and he goes to take his first breath of reality.
Yeah.
In the movie, the physical plane is where we go to be sick spiritually.
Isn't that interesting?
As a metaphor.
Yeah.
As a metaphor. And then your experience of reality is your fever.
Okay, I follow you.
In the movie, Astral City is where he goes home. He goes back home to Astral City, and it's in the future. They have these very cool beds. They float, and they heal with their hands. You know, it's all very futuristic and everything. And once in a while, someone, you know, they have their own little politics and the way they interface in heaven or whatever that place is, Astral City. And once in a while, someone will say, you know, I'm wondering how my son is making out on Earth. Maybe I should go back and take a peek-see. And everybody's sad to realize that that person is choosing to be ill so they can check on a part of themselves.
Ah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, and it brings to mind this term that I've heard you use before called five space. Now, can you tell me what you mean by that?
To express what five space would be like mathematically, it's like your Akashic records. It's like the drop of water of everything that you were and everything that you will be in the future, not this lifetime, you know, like your DNA, which is a lesser hologram of who you are, who you will be, you know, through this lifetime.
Right.
So there's another set of levels of resolution where you have that with all of your past life. And so I raised my daughter, Paula, as if, Jungian psychotherapy, nice term, as if, she wasn't real, I was hallucinating, and that she was the projection into the physical world of the younger feminine part of myself.
Uh-huh.
wanting to have dialogue with me. And what happened next is the way I raised her has led her to be, what is her title today? Oh, yes, a controller for the state of Oregon. She's even infiltrated the state. She has in charge of the budget under Kitzhoffer.
Oh, great.
That's my girl.
Well, it's interesting that these traditions, the esoteric traditions, all seem to agree on the idea of an Akashic record. So, you know, Theosophy, Anthroposophy, the Edgar Cayce readings all seem to agree on the existence of this Akashic record. And it sounds like a real process. As I recall, Cayce stated that you could even build a machine to read it.
So there you go. We are doing that at MIT right down the street from you.
So it's almost like these science and tech guys are finally starting to catch on to these powerful esoteric ideas and concepts.
I'm looking here, for example, at this magazine. This is Science News. Look what they're talking about.
Planet X. There it is. Nibiru.
Yeah, viable proof. It's now going into mainstream. Nibiru, you know, the dark star.
Yeah.
There is something happening. NASA has had pictures of it. Now the mainstream science things are starting to talk about it.
But you were talking about Planet X a long time ago. Now, how did you know that they were eventually going to accept it?
I'm just weird, so I knew about it a little earlier. You're weird because you want to believe.
Yeah, exactly.
The Anunnaki coming in with their Dyson spirit, take all the gold. What do you think?
Oh, I'm ready for it. A quick question, since we're talking about Planet X, how did you feel about the work of the late Zechariah Sitchin, the researcher who jump-started all the theorizing around Nibiru Planet X?
70% to 60%. He's got some valid arguments. Russians have always been superstitious.
Right. Okay. Well, we may touch on Sitchin again later, but right now I'm going to take you back in time because I'm going to ask you some questions about your work with the enigmatic Dr. Carl Schleicher and how that all came about.
Smoking man.
And that's right. He was the guy who they derived the character of the smoking man from on the X-Files, right?
Yeah. That's why they call me the real Fox Mulder.
Exactly. Right.
I did want to believe, however, that is true. And I wouldn't have seen it if I hadn't believed it.
Okay.
Yeah. Dr. Carl Schleicher, who is at the same desk on Wisconsin Avenue for 48 years.
Wow.
That's how many years he sat at that same desk. That's an alien.
Really?
I'm kidding. My ex-wife, Fiona, who's CIA, you know, the spy whisperer herself, I affectionately call her the icicle of ISIS. She did some very interesting studies and articles on Schleicher. Carl was in my life before Iona came in. I was already working for Carl. I had already done my SEAL work. And when Iona married me, I was deep into MRU.
And that's Mankind Research Unlimited.
Mankind Research, yeah, right. And out of anesthesiology. I did all my studies out of the UW. Carl Schleicher, he was an extremely bright man. And I was his Northwest Regional Director, which means anything on the West Coast that when military would find something that they had no idea what it meant, Antarctica, that's when they would bring in A-team. And mostly we never solved things. I would say less than 15% of what I did, I actually knew what I was doing.
Yeah.
That's how weird it was. And I did. Now, Carl was in charge of Montauk. And anything that happened on the East Coast was Carl's bailiwick. And what was happening is China Lake and Argonne, Livermore, was starting to encounter. I was working out of the Boeing Scientific Research Laboratory, BSRL, you know, out of, that later became the Space Center out of Kent.
Uh-huh.
But back then it was BSRL. And I did a think tank program like the one I had when I was part of Dr. Cohen's original think tank at Princeton. And I called it OAK, the Organization for the Advancement of Knowledge. It was a think tank for Battelle. Battelle's an interesting corporation. Look up Battelle Northwest out of Seattle, Washington.
Okay.
Douglas United Nuclear, and then, of course, Boeing. And Boeing, at that time, was the biggest thing in the world in terms. They were out of Wichita, they were out of LA, they're da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It was all over the place.
You know? And then you found yourself working with Carl.
I don't know what to say. I didn't meet him very often. I had daily and weekly dialogues and downloads and things with him. Everything back then was non-computer, although I had internet. Started internet at around 1971. We didn't have 360s until, probably 73. So a lot of work I did was typewriter and carbon papers. And I mean, that's what I remember before there was anything about, you know, floppies where you would program DOS into the computer each time before.
So what was his influence on you then?
Carl?
Yeah, looking back.
He's the one that got me into the mind control, the experiments with microwave.
Okay.
Synthetic telepathy in the early mind wars. I did cosmobiology. There was a guy named Yanov that had is able to accurately predict the birth of the sex of your child by when it was conceived.
Wow.
Okay, that, you know, you don't need, you know, sonar.
Right, yeah.
You can know before you have sex, kind of thing. And that was called the lunar sex cycle of the female, where she ovulates with the phase of the moon, the earth, and the sun in a certain alignment. That means if the woman moves, her period changes a little bit.
Oh, that's interesting.
Isn't that interesting? And it gets further because the one I did for Carl was accurately predicting earthquakes on the earth for the Department of Interior with the planet, and this is his partner, Uranus, Earth, and the Sun.
Got it.
Now, suspicious observers pretty much saying it's just the Sun.
Uh-huh.
It affects global changes and things like that, other than pole shifts, which is about to be any minute now. And, well, that's what's going to happen. It's going to be a pole shift.
All right.
It's going to be a crustal pole shift, not a magnetic pole shift. We had a magnetic pole shift 2 years ago when the backside pressure from the heliosphere pushed on the Earth. Now, that's the kind of thing Schleicher got me into. Anything that was of that nature. I'm the one that debriefed Milan Riesel when he defected on the extrasensory perception and studies with hypnosis. I later taught that to SEALs as how to think with your gut, working with instinct, which was outside space-time.
Well, let's get into that now, because this is very fascinating work.
Yeah.
So you were basically training them to use their intuitive powers to handle any situation that might come up in the line of duty.
That was that I could always teach them how to blow something up, and I could beef them up with steroids. What I needed was someone that made right decisions in times of crisis.
Right. How did you do it?
So the first thing we did was we tested their ESP.
Okay.
It's not an extra sense. It's your enteric nervous system, which is your first brain. This brain is here to make all your beliefs true. Now, what it does is if you have scenarios, you know, like, am I going to get shot or I'm not going to get shot? The passive possibility becomes a probability when you remember it was Merlin who said to Arthur, you know, anything not specifically forbidden is mandatory. That means if it's possible, you can count on it.
Uh-huh.
That's a metaphor. You know why? Because you make it happen.
I see. So in that sense, like, you can actually manifest it.
You are manifesting it. Not you can. You are.
Yeah. All right. I see.
The internal landscape, which is a higher awareness of your IQ, EQ, got to give it to the women.
Yeah.
You know. Well, that's the intuitional part, the part where you're outside space-time. That means when you flip it, you can make it anything you want.
Okay.
Not that it's statistical inference, because that's how this logic brain does. This one is outside space-time. That means you're talking to your past and your future.
Now, what would be a kind of good entry-level example of that?
I'm going to tell you another really interesting metaphor as I'm getting more professional in talking on radio and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Like I'm doing. Well, you can watch me evolve.
Sure.
You know, over the last. Well, you know, I'm getting there too.
I gotcha.
It's all of us process. It's as if My future self is talking to my current self and changing my past.
Aha. Uh-huh. Now, how is that possible?
Yeah. The past is what's the real part. In terms of physics.org, there's new technical papers out on the Big Bang where going forward in time is a secondary wave, just like in cavitation, and something else is going on here.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll tell you, that's very interesting, and it instantly makes me think of dreams, you know, because we have so many examples of individuals who've seen events coming in their dreams before they happen. So obviously, they've stepped outside of time and space.
Dream telepathy and the concepts of Maimonides Dream Labs and the studies that my mentor, Dr. Stanley Krippner, was doing with Montague Ullman. We did things like the Manager Foundation, and I set up all the biofeedback labs. But Stan was doing dream telepathy. You know, that was during the time of Dreamscape, how to impose information into the brain. What was that sci-fi movie that came out where they were trying to nudge people into certain ways of thinking and moving?
Yeah.
And it was where they were nudging people in their dreams.
Right. It's a Christopher Nolan movie.
And there were levels of dreams. A dream within a dream.
Right, right.
That metaphor, remember that? That's what's happening here. And this isn't real, and our concept of going forward in time is not real. I'm already there.
Okay.
And so what that's doing is making my ride easier as I get closer into self-realization. And there's something about being timeless where you can step outside. You do that in lovemaking. That's what the Jungians call sacred over profane.
Right.
You know, that place of time, according to Robert Ornstein, is a duration of consciousness. It's the way you organize your memory or the remembering of the experience. And like a resolution of a hologram, you can take a singularity and really make it big. That is what I'm doing with my lifetime right now. Do you know anybody that's done in three different lifetimes in agriculture and metaphysics and science?
Hey, that's great.
Like, you know why I'm doing that, don't you?
Why?
Because you can't make a living writing books. That's what's called a starving artist. So I decided to be three writers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Multiple personalities. This is it.
If we circle back to this dreams idea for a moment, why would the dreamer be outside of time and space and be able to look and see into the future? And again, this is not theoretical. You know, we know and we've seen this has happened with many different people.
Well, there are different kinds of dreams, first off. You know, you have lucid dreaming and you have, so you have different kinds of dreams. Some of them are prophetic. And that means they're giving you a little glimpse, a nudge, a wake-up call. You know, again, you can do it this way or you can do it that way. In the current book I'm writing, it's called, there's a chapter called The Stanford Argument.
Okay.
And it discusses the distinctional difference of intent and intentionality. Like when you try to do something, you have already set up to fail. It doesn't quite happen. How did Maxwell Smart to Agent 99 missed it by that much? At the end of the day, what you've done is what Aleister Crowley would have called true will. That is what you meant to have happen. Even if you did it kicking and screaming, creating karma and more, you know, fighting it all the way, or you were like Buddha, allowing it to come to you. In that case, it was an earthquake. It fell on him. He had enlightenment, trust me.
Oh, yeah.
But the idea that what you actually do, like showing up at precisely 9 o'clock, that is the bottom line in what I recognize as intent. And intent, it's why you're here. And so you can kick and scream and fight it and be angry and have cancer and have to come back in a time thing, you know, mini-me's, reincarnation, whatever way you want to play that, and do it until you get it right. The very fact that you understand what I'm doing and the fact that I'm saving myself is we are literally saving the world right now, this moment. That's once you got it, you already won.
Uh-huh.
That's how ESP works too, by the way, because it's divine right. Once you know that the message is there, that's when it happens. It's imagination and the training of it, and the internal landscape you choose, whether the glass is half full or half empty. You have choices. And if you're half empty, look what I just lost. Yeah. If it's half full, wow, look what just got given to me. There's a third glass that's also yellow liquid, and I say it's full of piss. But you can see the three glasses sitting there. One's full of piss, and the other's half empty. And yeah, there you go.
Well, this thought manifestation is very interesting because, of course, a tool like that is almost like a hidden technology. And like technology, it doesn't discriminate. So, you know, it can be used for good or evil purposes. It's a pure mechanism. But I imagine in the wrong hands, it can be a real hazard.
Yeah, I watch the Christians polarize God into a devil, you know. And God's not at war with anything. Man is not seeing the right or left side of the fence.
Uh-huh.
You see what I'm saying? God's everything. So if we see something at war with itself, that's conflict inside. You know, that's a metaphor in terms of androgyny and that construct. You have a feminine part inside. When you choose a mate,
right, so it's starting
try to
the
choose
coast
a mate
now, yeah,
that most accurately reflects that inner part of self. That's in the tree of life. The two paths to God are either the hermit or the lovers. You know, you do it androgynous, internal or external. You choose a mate, and when you have conflict with that mate, it's not about the mate. It's just that her values are a little different than your values. You know, you've chunked them differently.
I see.
So I would say that all the divorces in the country and where people no longer da-da-da-da-da.
Sure. You know, that's a dangerous situation.
Usually always because their values are different than yours. And one of the things I trained Navy SEALs was to change a belief system like you would a pair of clothing. Because a belief system opens certain doors and closes others.
Yeah.
Like if you were a staunch Christian and two aliens walked in the door, the big question is, would you be able to see them?
Hmm.
Say, it limits your possibilities.
Now, right.
If you're going to Iraq and you're a Christian, if you don't put that Christianity thing just to the side for a moment, you can get yourself killed.
Sure.
And so a belief isn't supposed to be a God-given because it varies and it's arbitrary. It actually should be seen as a tool to accomplish what your true will is.
Yeah. What about, well, speaking of tools then, you talk a lot about meditation.
Yes, I do.
And even in some of these secret government programs that you worked on, meditation was a major part of it.
Oh, yeah. The idea of being able to control the mind for, interrogation. You know, they would like, you know, there's to do a polygraph, you know, where they're measuring heart and breath and a little dilation in the eyes. And, oh, look at that sweat over there. You know, that part, to learn how to control autonomic functions, allows you to change altered states of consciousness. And like, for example, ESP and hypnosis, the relationship is there's a state of consciousness that's right there. Not over here, right there. When you get there, you're in touch with outside of space and time. And you learn how to go there. But then over here is another altered state that you can do other things. For example, in my book, Power Tools, I taught SEALs how to change the perception of time with breath. That means that when you're in extreme disaster, everything slows down. And that's a state of consciousness that you can induce by breath control, you know, and then everything that you're doing, experiencing the movement of Tai Chi when in fact martial art. And put a SEAL, by being able to control their perception of time, put them in a place where their fighting abilities were paranormal. Now, anybody can do this. It's a technique. And that's what training the mind is about, is learning how to play the different states of consciousness. And magic, as Aleister Crowley defined it, is the art of changing consciousness at will. That's why in the early years it was all about drugs. They worked.
Right. So why are altered states so important to these kinds of processes?
Altered states, and there's a whole gamut of them, is why all my books talk about the different ones, trying to break them into sections of identification, you know, like physical, you know, your nose goes numb, or now your hands goes numb. And
yeah.
Yeah. These are different states of consciousness where in this state you can do this, but you can't do over here.
So what is that level of consciousness where you can obtain information and then bring it back to the physical world?
Well, okay. In Power Tools, I talk about the parataxic, the prototaxic, and syntactic modes of consciousness. And they break them into there's no ego awareness. There's parataxic is where there's art and mythology, and you start to see metaphor. And syntactic modes are when you're using biofeedback and you just drop your heart rate. You absolutely have physical conscious control. Now, a shaman is usually an individual who places consciousness in the bird of an eagle and then see what the eagle sees. Okay?
Okay.
But he has no memory of how he did that. Prototaxic, primitive, automatic writing, you know, glossia, whatever.
Yeah.
Parataxic is when your dreams start to become prophetic. And there's some kind of a dialogue going on where you're getting more information on the level of awareness in the conscious state. Consciousness, remember, from Astral City is where you go to be sick spiritually.
Yeah. So,
yeah, it is in a very important state in the scheme of altered states, just where we currently are enjoying our habitat, and that it has abilities and survival things that allow you to function, sort of. Stay tuned on that, you know, the way the world's going. I don't know. And what I'm about is learning how to play all of this. Change the movie.
I see.
And that's what I'm doing now. I'm learning how to do that. And as I do more radio, I'm learning the skill sets of how to give that to you. Because here's the bad news. I don't get out of here until you do your part.
Well, that's a thought.
Well, it's archetypal level of encounter, the idea of the collective unconscious, where I am you and you are me and I am the walrus.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right.
I mean, that's that place. And that's only four up of eight levels to God.
Right, right.
In Leary's neurologic circuit. So, you know, here we are at the beginning of the end.
Well, that's intriguing. Well, why do you think that this theme of apocalypse is so deep in the human psyche? What do you think it's trying to represent to us?
Apocalypse has always been part of the collective unconscious, whether it's 10 minutes to midnight or 10 milliseconds to midnight. It's part of our length, girth, and width. That's Joseph Campbell.
Right.
And so it isn't a bad thing that's about to happen. Glass is half full. We have an opportunity to change the way we would like it to be from the way it was.
Uh-huh.
How we do that, stay tuned. I'm writing that book now.
Oh, yeah. Good, good. Well, let's look at a state of mind like remote viewing, for example. Now, aside from being able to see secret locations and things like that, some of them can actually view events in time.
Yep.
Now, what mechanism is it that allows them to project their consciousness actually across time?
There are, in my ESP book, there I use the Dr. Rind, Duke University.
Sure, J.B. Rind.
Catalog, okay. And Rind classified things into two categories, PK phenomena outside the body and ESP inside the body.
Okay.
ESP had, you know, precognition, retrognition, clairascension, clairaudience, clairvoyance. Radius, you know, it had a whole bunch of things that originated inside the body. Astral projection, Shirley MacLaine, out on a limb, had a silver cord where you took your consciousness and placed it on location, received the data, and then brought it back to here.
Okay, got it.
Remote viewing is a PK phenomena where you are allowing something to look at you. That's in Emergent Mind Bulletin, Maddie Pitkinen, Alex Kavaranen, and Leon Sidorov. And you can read about that. It's extremely dangerous because remote viewing, we already know, and one of the axioms is that when you look at something, you change it, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, now you're allowing something to look at you.
Uh-huh.
And if you stack it up with a bunch of drugs, what happens next? Your immortal soul is changed. And so it's risky.
Okay.
And it's in and out of time, just like ESP is with astral projection.
So let's think about someone who really is an expert at remote viewing. You know, I'm thinking about Ingo Swann, for example.
And Targ, Russell Targ.
Right, Russell Targ, the physicist from Stanford Research Institute. But there were cases where, for example, a kidnapped diplomat was found, or doing this kind of psychic spying on foreign enemies was something they were particularly good at.
That was SRI in the 80s.
Okay.
I was in SRI in the 70s.
Okay. And you think they were more cutting edge in the 70s, right?
What's that?
You think they were more cutting edge in the 70s?
I absolutely do. In fact, I can candidly say to you that there was a brain drain or shift in everything from the 70s to the 80s.
Uh-huh.
In the 70s, it was blue sky. We had no idea where our research was going to go. It's okay. Check it out. Go for it, right? In the 80s, if it didn't have application, they weren't interested in studying it. They figured they'd had either enough information from alien artifacts or past, you know, civilizations, whatever. And yet, they were trying to containerize man as a matrix, you know, a battery. So many BTUs in, that so many BTUs out. You have so many of them, and it works like a little machine. And that was the 80s. Where the 70s, we still had wonder in what we would call blue sky.
Okay.
We had no idea where we were going to go. It's open field. Go for it. And it mostly led nowhere, you know, which was also important because you knew what it wasn't then.
But the 80s were limited in this sense because they just wanted applications.
Right. It either had like marketing. That's the time when they stopped using metal like a DeLorean so that it's the best that could possibly be built. And now we're going to have something we can time our watches on when it's going to wear out and fall apart.
Yeah.
Mopar. It's a metaphor. It was like that.
So they kind of lost the wonder of what they were doing in a sense.
No, it was more that they didn't care about the wonder anymore. It was about controlling man rather than man controlling himself.
I see.
As a metaphor, marketing. It was that's about the time that transnational corporations started to actually become larger than countries.
Wow. Yeah.
And so it was no longer about geographic. It was no longer about culture. It was about something else.
Now, I'm curious, since you're such a veteran of these really top secret projects, has the gag order for what you can and cannot say expired on these? Or are there some secrets from those days that they still expect you to keep even now?
I am under no rules of engagement at this point. For the first 20 years, I was under secrecy clearance.
Sure.
After I left. Yeah, I couldn't talk about things I did. And so I was a guy out of living in the woods, farming herbs. And nobody had a clue that I had this other incarnation because I couldn't talk about it. Now I can.
Okay.
But, you know, 40 years later, it's 40 years. Yeah. I'm not important. The only thing that I'm dangerous to is that I can connect dots. That's what I did for the military. I'm really good at that. And the internet is a treasure of disinformation.
Yes.
Oh, yep. It's on the internet. It's got to be true, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because they wouldn't have put anything bad on the internet, would they? Predators, whatever. It's interesting how our culture is changing. Yeah.
Well, when you look at the level of secrecy that's happening now, and, you know, I think about the black projects that, say, DARPA is conducting now. Would you say that the character of these programs is darker now? You know, are the purposes more sinister than they were before? And how do they regard the public from their perch in the land of secret projects?
I'm going to quote the ancient one to Dr. Strange. When he's battling Dormammu, and the ancient one said, "The power is in the secret, and the secret is the power."
Okay.
It has intentionality and the idea that information might be a power tool, knowledge. And so there are agendas. When you have the Pentagon, when I worked at the Pentagon, there were actual physical wars going on between floors. I'm not shooting each other, but pretty much.
Wow.
You know, agendas, cults. So someone told me, the CIO, David Wilcock, I think, said something about now today, the CIA is 65% good and 45%.
Oh, my God.
I mean, you know, like there's some sort of balance going on.
Oh, that's
in
absurd.
The wars and, yeah. And really, you know, I would
you
say.
You know, you wonder if that isn't just wishful thinking.
It's okay. Well, it's. You know.
Yeah. Well, I do understand having a sense or a feeling about something. And since basically we're heading toward the intuitive here, what can you tell me about the role of the intuition and how that affects our consciousness?
Intuition is really a very valuable tool. You can use that to know when something's resonating and it sets. And this is another important thing. It doesn't have to be true for each of us. That's God's will. That's what made the important, our most natural resource is the diversity of our children. Not the common core, they're all the same, but that this wide spectrum. I have friends at Spark, which is a local thing here for the autistic. Okay. And how is it that these autistic children can do bedding plants better than a master gardener?
Fascinating.
I have met Temple Grandin. There's nothing wrong with her. I am a functioning savant. There's nothing really wrong with me. I'm a little different, but
sure.
But and I bob and I drool, just like I do. You know, I'm functioning savant. I think that our diversity is where our real, true, natural resource lies.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I want to really go deep into the question of these altered states of consciousness, and you know, in these secret projects that study the power of the mind. What was it about meditation that they found interesting?
It led to bliss states. That's Persinger and those forms of directions up in Ottawa, whatever. And there's different levels of love. You know, you have Eros, Philo, Agape, Telema. Okay, that's love and all the different sales of that in there. The second above love is bliss. That's what meditational states will do, is take you to bliss states, where your brain is actually patterned differently, and you are in a bliss thing where everything you see is cool. And then you go to the next place up here. That's where the Quakers went, and it was called joy. And when you can find your joy in something, that's where it all is. That's the center. That's the highest form that I'm aware of at this point. I'm discovering, just like you. But that's where you know, when you're in the trough, 4x4, doing what you're supposed to be doing here.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in that place, at the end of the day, you didn't have to fight your way through it. It just kind of happened.
Oh, well, that's intriguing. And it certainly sounds like we have a lot to learn about just how vast our state of being can be. I'm going to shift gears here to where we are now in 2015. Looking out at the world conditions, you know, what kind of picture do you see shaping up for our future and some of the tricky terrain that lies ahead?
When the dollar hits the brick wall and everything, you will know this, by the way, when Walmart closes their doors. Right now, everything at Walmart has gone up in price. It's going to continue to do so as our gas prices drop. That's how it's going to work. You know how that works. Gold, silver. You know, probably the gold's all going to be taken away when Planet X comes in and Nibiru discovers it's a Dyson sphere with a little, you know.
Right. Well, let's get your real take on how you see the next decade playing out. I know you have a kind of gifted insight about the environment and world conditions. So where do you see things headed right now?
Yeah, I'm a physicist. There's only certain ways the dots can connect.
Right.
Fukushima is possibly an extinction event. And that's one of the reasons Kurzweil has his, what is it called, transhuman project, transhuman movement.
Transhumanism, yes.
I mean, we've already got Avatar 1. It already exists. There it is. We've got an Avatar 1. There's four avatars. You place your consciousness in a golem. Well, I don't know what it is,
Yeah.
I guess. There was a science fiction I read where the guy was going to Saturn to go down on the surface of Saturn, to do some mining or whatever. How do you get down on the surface of Saturn with the gravity? Gravitational pull is probably 1,000 times that of Earth. You crushed into a jelly. Well, they created, he'd be up in a spaceship and have an avatar that he would inhabit. It was designed.
Fascinating.
To be able to, things like that. That's where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
And with the new fullerenes and the direction of exclusion zone waters in these Buckminster fullerene molecules, they're giving lethal doses of radiation to rats and feeding it fullerene water with a 95% recovery. That is being reproduced everywhere.
Can you describe fullerene water?
A fullerene is carbon atoms. Carbon bonds to itself, so you can have big flat sheets of carbon going off in a zillion directions for a million miles. Bonds to itself, just keeps bonding. When you have 60 of them, they click, clunk, form a buckyball.
Okay.
60, it's called C60. It's a buckyball. Not 59, it makes 60 molecules to make it happen, right? There's another one at C70 and another one at 120. It's a mathematical thing based on Buckminster Fuller, the Marshall Papers book I'm going to write with Bob Marshall. And so with that, 60 is a small enough one, and the stasis between the two carbon atoms is just enough to slide a water molecule through it. And they put exclusion zone water in it. That's H3O2. And what happens is the water, when it touches the surface, has changes and registers something, and these form these nanotubes of things, that big long millions of these buckyballs, and they form a nanotube that goes in, and because of its magnetic fields, attracts extremely rare heavy metals and ionizing radiation. And it actually is a way to take plutonium, for example, that might have gotten in your body and is binging around like a little pinball, creating cancer, and then the next thing you have cancer, stops that before it metastasizes and gets creepy. And that's what we think now is how it works. Nobody knows. Unfortunately, there is a darker side to fluorine water. Instead of putting exclusion zone water in it and forming this super antioxidant, let's put deuterium in it instead and have a cold fusion reaction.
Oh. Well, what is that going to do?
Well, it might have been responsible for building 7 when it came down slug.
Oh, yeah.
It's a plasma. When after the building came down a slug, there's only one thing in nature that will slag concrete. That's a plasma, which is approximately 60 times hotter than the surface of the sun. Plasma is the real deal. And I'm a plasma physicist. And so,
can you just briefly describe what deuterium does and why would someone use it in this process?
What deuterium does is it goes cold fusion. And the Buckminster fullerene structure, the geodesic dome, is the only structure in nature that can contain that kind of energy.
Right.
Is literally 100 times harder than diamond as an allotrope. As an allotrope of carbon allotrope, diamond is really, really hard. Nanoballs, nanotubes, are 100 times stronger. And that's what they're building right now to do the space elevator to the space station out of Japan.
I see.
And less than 5 years from having that elevator. That's how close we are in terms of that form of research. And so this all came out of nanotechnology with the good, the bad, And who knows what the ugly is going to be like.
Yeah.
The breakthroughs NASA says to ask the original question, what's going to happen? NASA, there is a paper out called The Future Weapons of War, The War After Next. And welcome to the Borgs, the humans, and the bots. Yeah. That's the way they do it. Well, there it is. And they accurately predict what's going to happen. On page 8, they say Spaceship Earth, and we're plundering the natural resources, and there's no instruction manual on what we're doing. You know, they lit out, you know, no pixie dust, I believe is the word they use. And it accurately predicts these nanoweapons that have been used, now deployed, probably in certainly Gaza and Baghdad Airport. That was not a tactical nuke. That was most likely a neutron fullerene fusion bomb. And I have the patents out of Livermore. There's a guy out of Carlsbad has that all patented. They're building the targets. I've got a picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger, his governor, looking at the target down there at the National Ignition Facility. Houston, we have ignition. And with that, whether or not that was deployed on 9/11, I don't know. I don't know if it will. I'll ever know. But you could simply put that carbon-reinforced fiber inside steel and vaporize it with no forensics and have something just disappear.
Right,
You want to go spookier? You could talk about geoengineering, placing that molecule in the air we breathe. And then you have the good Captain Kirk inhabiting the bad Captain Kirk's body. And has that machine, they can pick up anybody's screen, but pushing a button, they disappear.
Right, yeah.
Now, if a NASA document actually predicts that weapon, whether they have that today or not, that's next.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to hijack our air like they did our water, privatization of water.
Yes. Well, you've outlined some pretty advanced scenarios here with some really interesting and disturbing implications. But what are you leading toward? You know, can you bring all of that together and tell everyone what you're saying?
I'm saying to you that all of this nonsense is going to stop shortly, and that rather than looking at it as the doom and gloom, we have an opportunity here before us.
Right.
Actually change it the way we want to barter, you know, that kind of thing. I have some websites like ebarterbank.net. That's a local one. There's another one in North Carolina called permacredits.com. When I was at Ithaca, the Ithaca dollar at Cornell was a standard for all graduate students there.
So you think the concept of money is about to change?
Money is a theatrical prop.
Yeah.
What's real is your labor, what you do, what the end of the day, your intent, what happens at the end of the day, that's real.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The rest of it is sort of kind of maybe.
Yeah, right. Well, so let's take a normal person out there. They're sitting there and they're watching this and they say, well, you know, I'm sure the media would tell me all about these things that were going to happen. I don't have to think about it. What do you have to say to them?
The news reporting today in America is worse than during World War II in Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
And there will be tribunals and accountability. What's going on today is so wrong that if you don't get it, I mean, why are you not? The three words that most Europeans use for Americans to describe America is ignorant, ill-informed, and complacent.
Oh, boy.
Dead on. Now, with that information, here's the bottom line. What you do right now is how your children learn how to do it. And while you may not be able to save this earth, there are little eyes watching you and what you do. That's how they learn how to do it, including spousal abuse, gambling, whatever. They watch you and how you do it. And so you have a fiduciary responsibility for your behavior now, because your children, oh, that's Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, teach your children well. That is the most important resource we have. There is nothing more valuable in family. When I was in Mexico, oh man, I have never seen anything like Mexico City. It was like 100 miles of solid ghetto. That's from Grants Pass to Roseburg. Just solid, solid city.
Wow.
And they had barrios and, you know, little neighborhoods with walls, encampments. And the guys were running with their Tech Nines and the white slavery and the drugs and the human trafficking. And yet, all the children in Mexico were still happy. Why? The family was still intact. That's why my programs with SEALs and others is to empower our children. We have a thing we're doing called the Urban Farm Project of North America. We went into Chattanooga. Last year I was down in Puebla, Mexico, where I have 4,000 children growing wildflowers, you know, 4 years old to 12 with the mentoring program, you know, third graders teaching the first graders, that kind of mentoring thing. And then instead of using master gardeners down there, I'm using transpersonal psychology grad students as part of their thesis, working with the children as facilitators where the children teach each other. And what they're doing is they're creating wildflowers to grow wildflower salads. And then they go into the streets of Mexico City feeding the homeless, paying it forward. And everybody gets it. A small group of children can feed a large group of adults with non-GMO food.
Oh, well, that's really an amazing project. Now, does it seem to you that the public is really getting the hazards of GMO now in their food supply?
Everybody's getting the fact that the way we're going with GMOs, you know, it's we don't need to do that. It is true. There are too many people on Earth.
Sure.
And that there will be blood. But my guess is it's not going to be so much in the United States as it is in Asia or Africa. Now, Africa's a mess hole because all the mafias of the world generally now manage waste management. In the United States, it's our, you know,
yeah,
disposal, that kind of thing. And it's Yakuza. Now, in Europe, it was Germany. And Germany has been burying nuclear waste all through Africa for more than 20 years.
Oh, boy.
Now it's getting into the groundwater, just like that movie, what was it called, Sahara.
Right.
And, it's what's actually happening is that Ebola and the symptoms of Ebola are precisely the same thing as radiation sickness.
That is so interesting. Well, the media has done a really deplorable job in general of informing us of the deeper story behind these things. But what other major events that are going on do you think they're keeping undercover?
We are not being given full disclosure on what's happening with Fukushima. It just hit the United States. It took 2.1 years for the radiation to hit the West Coast.
It's starting to hit the coast now, yeah.
Right this minute. There it is. We're seeing it. There it is. And we now have a model on how bad that worked. The problem is, there was when the reactors went off, those were thermonuclear explosions. And what happened is a bunch of particulate went up into the stratosphere. And while it's not coming down, it does once in a while drop something. That's where we get these radon levels. And where our background radiation now is literally, even in Oregon here, is 10 times what it was 4 years ago.
Sure. That's a dangerous situation.
It's worse than dangerous. The military uses algorithms. It's a form of Clifford algebra that listens to the chatter on the internet and then taking keywords and the kinds of chatter that are going to accurately predict the future.
Yeah.
Okay. And those are called infobots, a type of information gathering in bot form and synthesized to projections. And all of them are suggesting that Fukushima was an extinction event. And that is why the transhuman program is about.
Well, they're in overdrive now for sure, and we can only wonder what they're up to. Now, when we come back, I want to ask you some questions about Earth changes on the horizon and what will make us sustainable when these changes come, and also what you've learned about GMOs and mind control. We'll be back with Dr. Richard Allen Miller.
dark journalist. The truth is never easy. Top guests like investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe.
The people are serving the government. That's the truth.
Former defense minister Paul Hellyer.
The president and Congress haven't run the United States for generations.
Historian Richard Dolan.
I hope listeners realize that this is not a run-of-the-mill interview that I did.
Scholar Joseph P. Farrell.
If you don't consider the black budget, then you're missing over half of the financial picture.
Interviews like you've never heard before.
You know, we need dark journalists, so just keep doing what you're doing.
Visit darkjournalist.com.
And we're back with Dr. Richard Allen Miller discussing some of his very interesting experiences working on secret projects for the government, and now coming forward and sharing some innovative tools with us in this new millennium. Now, Rick, I want to ask you, you've started this company, Northwest Botanicals.
Yes, I do. Our dad, yes, I do, yes. You know, I'm in agriculture, I'm known as the postman. That's what I've been doing for the last 35 years. Not physics, like we've been talking.
Right.
I've gone into agriculture.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, you can see how important this field of farming and agriculture is for our future.
I think that I was bred for this moment to make agriculture and physics in a metaphysical, meta meaning beyond physics, way of being. Sovereignty is a state of mind. And Rick had a word for that called autark, supreme individual sovereignty. And you start with your water, then you have some of your food production, which is kind of important. And power and da-da-da-da-da. I am going to suggest that most of us are going to probably have to go back to our grandfather's period.
Yes.
Horses, things. Ernest Kallenbach, a guy I grew up with, wrote a book called Ecotopia. And it came out in the 70s, and it was about 1984 when the U.S. government of Washington and Oregon and California secede from the Union, close their doors, missing plutonium. That's how they get their isolation, and then open their doors in 1999. This is a long time ago book.
Right.
And it shows another way of living, like Amsterdam using bicycles, free bicycles, and, you know, for transportation.
Yeah.
There is a new ecologist out at Berkeley called Michael Tobias, who wrote Voice of the Planet. And PBS did a 9-part, 2-hour on that book with Meryl Streep and William Shatner, where Meryl Streep is the supercomputer in Tibet, and William Shatner is the ecologist that goes there and discovers the snow leopard and those concepts of environment and relationship to stasis or sustainability. What I'm doing today for some people is putting together sustainable lifeboats with oars. Well, little kibbutz I'm out in the woods. You know, you can take Horizon Village down the street here, a bunch of old parts retired, and they put their garden in the center, and their houses are like a wagon train. And if we arm them...
Right, watch out. Well, when you look at scenarios like that, and, you know, you bring in this proliferation and the big push behind GMOs, you have some interesting ideas about GMOs and mind control, and how those two things come together.
Well, GMOs was that back then. What I got a smoking gun. Monsanto is actually altering a specific gene in wheat to activate a bacteria in your gut that you got from a cat. If a cat has hummed up next to your face, you know, you're infected. You've got eight, what is called T. gondii. And in Science News, another one, a few years back, they refer to that thing as little mind benders. What it does, when that bacteria goes across the blood-brain barrier, they've got you.
Uh-huh.
And there is infection. And the more wheat you eat, it activates that bacteria. And it's done with intent. And I came out with actual documents that Monsanto was doing in this area of genetics that is creepy. They're trying to take control of your body. You are no longer what you eat. You are whom you feed.
Huh.
You know, I have a healing. And so your food choices become critical. I do not as a rule, eat grains anymore.
Yeah.
They're toxic. All of the grains are toxic. Not even about GMOs anymore. It's gladomorphin, gluten. There's a whole series of neurotransmitters in there where they take control of your gut, your enteric nervous system. You want more, and that's why we're obese. Sugars. And then you put some sugars in there, and that does creepy things with certain kinds of molds.
Now, so it's interesting. In Oregon, actually, they have a number of ballot initiatives about GMO labeling that failed.
Yeah, we may be the first one to go after them. Good luck to that. I will tell you that Monsanto spent a buttload of money to stop that initiative.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
It's still in recount. Did you know it hasn't passed?
Right, right, exactly.
That's they spent more money on Oregon as a staging ground. I remember when Vermont chose not to require labeling because Monsanto was going to break that as a state. Let me give you an idea of what.
And Monsanto went to sue them after that.
Just like they're doing geoengineering for their new aluminum-resistant GMO.
Wow.
Yeah, creepy. Now, aside from all of that, Monsanto will shortly be dead, pretty much. And it'll be like Hydra. There'll be two more that rise up out of that. Well, it will be like that. Transnational corporations. Let me give you some.
Well, because of the alternative media and because of some of these ballot initiatives, it does seem like they are being found out and that their program is somewhat exposed now.
Yeah, everybody is waking up just like they are to geoengineering. When the U.S. government went broke and they closed down War Memorial so the guy in the wheelchair couldn't even go because they had guards to make sure he couldn't go inside the War Memorial. I looked up in the sky and they're laying him down. Who's paying for that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't us. So how does that work? Mm-hmm. Hijacked our airs? Possible bio-API like I suggested with a good and bad Captain Kirk? I mean, you know, there's things going on and they're in counterplay with each other and they have nothing to do with countries. I have a metaphor I want to give you. It's like the state of Oregon's budget is $8.4 billion. That's what it takes to run the state of Oregon. Johnson & Johnson Wax, which is 40th in a string of pharmaceuticals, 40th down, there's one up here, this one here, that's their quarterly budget. That means that this company is four times bigger than the state of Oregon. And there are 40 other companies, one of which is 40 times bigger than the United States. For money, cash flow. Now, what do you think's happening next in terms of smart money going to the new America, like Paraguay, da-da-da-da-da?
Hmm.
You know, they're going to bankrupt the country. They're going to discard it. Everything is known from tomography. They got everything mapped out. And these corporations are using our countries like stepping stones. And we are no longer a democracy or a republic. We are in a very bad state. Now, all of that's going to break apart shortly when the petrodollar hits the wall. And when that does, I am suggesting that when you have no money to invest, you have no money for anything, what you have to barter will ultimately be where your joy lies. Whether you're a musician, you're a moving gorilla, whatever you are, you understand that will be your value in the scheme of things.
Yeah. What can you barter?
So you should follow your joy, not the money.
Mm-hmm.
that's where it's going to all be at.
Fascinating.
Ultimately. That's my crystal ball as a scientist that taught metaphysics, natural sciences. I see opportunity. The Oregon Country Fair, they hold it out of Veneta near Eugene every year. And it's called Veneta Freaky.
Oh, that's great.
A bunch of old ladies making fashion statements. They run around taking painted. It's a barter fair. The idea of exchanging value, you know, and your value is different than mine. I should remind you, in the oldest book in magic that has ever been written, okay, the Greater and Lesser Keys of Solomon. The second paragraph says, ownership is enhanced when shared with another.
Mm.
There is It's not about ownership. It's about being able to share it.
Yeah.
Something else that happens there. It's the relationship you have to yourself. So that is our future. And Zeitgeist moving forward suggested that. You know that Zeitgeist.
Yeah. It had some issues, but it was interesting.
Yeah, it did. I love George Carlin. God has everything, but he needs more money. George Carlin is my old guy.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to think of a positive model for a civilization that would work on planet Earth. You know, do you think a large part of the problem is that we don't really have good records of what happened, what really happened in our ancient past? Do you think there are some missing chapters in our understanding of our own history?
I think we were invaded. I think, not by aliens per se, but, I have a big question about that fourth genome in the blood type, rhesus negative. Where did that come from?
Yeah.
Well, bloodlines of Christ aside, a war for Earth might be going on inside each of us, where you're battling the alien part.
Right. I'm going to go back to the literal alien part, and then jump to your metaphysical one, because this is very interesting the way you talk about it. You've done a lot of research in these programs. What do you think they know about the alien reality, and how much of it do you think is real?
Cowboys and aliens. I think they've been around here for a long time. I think we were invaded 200,000 years ago. I do think there's probably some kind of breakaway a form of man, probably on Mars right now.
Yeah.
You know, with stargates and whatever. What a stargate is or not, I don't know what it is. I knew about it in the 70s. We hadn't discovered it. It was in the 80s that they actually discovered it. Second Bush went into Iraq, had tomography, knew right where to get it. When he got on board that ship, he had all these medals on and all of that.
Right.
Said the war's over. We got it. Oops. And then, you know, the war went on for the next.
Right, right.
False flag.
You're talking about the Baghdad Museum, right? Where they went. Are you talking about when they went into the Baghdad Museum and there was?
No, talking about when they went up into northern Iraq into a rare region called the Yazidis.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
And that place was written about by Joseph Isaias, a Jesuit at the Vatican in 1919. Aleister Crowley was talking about it like you and I on radio, you know, advanced scouts before the church comes out with it. 20 years earlier, Crowley was talking about IWAS and channeling in Cairo.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, yes. Good.
Oh, he was definitely intriguing.
Who?
Crowley was definitely an intriguing writer.
Well,
but Gurdjieff also talked about these Yazidis.
And Swedenborg, all of them have mentioned that. You can go into William James, and there is, Swedenborg was one of mine. Crowley had a large influence on me, but this is important to say about Crowley. A teacher can only take you as far as they themselves have been.
Right.
Crowley died as a drug addict in Hastings. It was like Tombstone, where they had no idea what opium really was or what addiction really meant.
Yeah.
They hadn't got those formally defined like we do today. You know, the different relationship, too.
So he was kind of a tainted channel in a sense.
No, he was brilliant. He would be like a metaphor. If I were making a movie on Aleister Crowley, the actor I would have chosen would have been Truman Capote.
right.
You know, Colin Wilson wrote about him in the book The Occult, where the chapter is called The Beast Himself. Yeah. Crowley was Victorian and English, so there's a lot of hysteria drama, and he liked to be in your face challenging your issues right down in core level by tattooing 666 in his forehead just because. He was not a Satanist. That's a Christian form of misconception. Christianity is the only religion in the world that has some kind of entity at war with God. No other religion does. And they have devils, you know, demons, you know, lesser elements like in the Horde of the Dahl and, you know, areas of that structure.
Sure.
But in terms of having a counterpart to God, that's Christianity. It is. So Satanism is a perverted form of Christianity. It is probably not any more real in Christianity. I watched how Constantinople changed the Bibles. When I came out of grad school, I wasn't finding answers in physics. Where do you go? And so I studied under Gershom Scholem. I did my own translations of the Bible as a scholar, learning Greek and Old Hebrew. And I didn't find answers there either, but I found discrepancies in the different things that are doing. I like the interlinear translations of the Bible, you know, the Greek.
Oh, yeah.
Ones that Jehovah's Witnesses use. That's more accurate historically. Most of the rest of it is political. That's why they're suggesting the Pope is the last Pope, because at some point religions aren't going to
right
what they are. Mostly religions are there for fellowship, to find people of like belief. Like, I'm a Quaker, and I'll sit here and shake when I can. That's how I,
oh, yeah, right.
That's how they got their name in. I won't do this. Conscientious objector.
Right.
The idea that there's something more going on in the mythologies of Christ and that kind of thing. I'll tell you what I do know. Christ's philosophy was Essene. He studied with Essene. And that system is where we get a lot of our values, you know, in terms of should not kill, should not covet, and, you know, those kinds of things.
And they knew the Kabbalah well, too, right?
The Kabbalah, QBL, was basically, it's Hermetic Kabbalah. Yeah, it came out of Merkaba mysticism, basically, and was word of mouth. That's what QBL means, word of mouth. It was an oral tradition. It wasn't written in books for a long, long period. I studied with Gershom Scholem, and basically I'm a Hermetic Kabbalist. I use Kabbalah as a filing system. When I have something and I don't know what it means, there it is. I break it down into properties. You know, is it mercury or all? Is it air? Is it, you know, into different categories. And it's like a filing system. And then I have a sense of where it goes. And the tree of life is a roadmap back to the garden.
Mm.
You know, you have male and female pillars with, you get to God either as the lovers or the hermit. You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. It's in metaphor of how you relate to yourself for personal transcendence, trying to merge with something beyond self. There's self-realization and God-realization. A lot of religions will combine the two. In fact, they are different.
I see.
Well, self-realization is what your construct of what God is, and that's only halfway to what real God is. And so, because God, by definition, is that which is not knowable.
Right, exactly. Well, you've had some very interesting experiences in your life and participating in these secret programs. Now, one of these experiences, I know people like to sensationalize a bit, and you've had your fair share of interviews where they just hammer away at this. I don't want to do that. Instead, what I'd like to do is just have you tell me what was relevant for you in that experience. And the setup is that in one of these programs you were in, they needed you to interact with an ET. Or at least that's what they told you.
I don't know what happened, but I have no way of there's something that short circuits me. I'm not able to talk about it.
I don't know.
Needles in my head. I don't know.
Right.
Well, something happened. I have memory, and I can't get access to it. But what I'm doing right now is part of possibly that mate.
Hmm. Yeah.
I'm like, not an avatar. I don't know what that is. I'm kind of like where I am, you can be easily. That kind of awareness. And we all have to go there before the earth is saved. And you have to do it because while you may not save the earth, your child is watching you. And that's a real mini me or a mini incarnation of you. I don't know how that works.
Huh. Yeah, I understand what you mean. Well, for purposes of getting this right, what you saw was a gray alien. Is that correct?
It was an alien that was over 7 feet tall, had a very long neck, had an oval face, and felt feminine.
Okay.
No sex available. You know, it was either they were wearing a skin cloth thing to protect him from slump, you know, down here in Fort Space. I don't know how that works. But I remember that's why I did the work in synthetic telepathy, because I experienced it. I could not understand how this entity could talk to me without words.
Interesting.
And what it is, they were using microwave band. They measured it. And basically, when I say she, I don't know what it was, but that's what it felt like, was a feminine. It felt feminine, you know. And I could hear the words in my head that were not my words. You know how you have internal dialogue?
Sure.
It's kind of like that, except I knew it was not me because it had a feminine quality to it.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And what happened next was I was there not very long, probably 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just standing there, and that's where nobody knew what was happening because the alien was talking to me in my head. And the voices were reassuring. That meant it had probably control of adrenaline and da-da-da-da-da. And my, you know, used to say there was this one group of aliens that were studying man because they could not figure out how it could exist as a life form when the difference between being normal and psychotic could be measured in micrograms.
Yeah.
Or a pretty fragile entity.
Absolutely.
You know, I've done work in that area with video feedback systems, you know, for the military. And right now, I can simulate almost any drug experience using sound and light, just the way I gate it.
Fascinating.
I activate certain specific neurotransmitters. That means I've learned how to talk. I put a mora into my German acupuncture on the top, and I wave shape it. By using certain kinds of pulses, I can activate certain neurotransmitters and talk to them to do work. And they then can talk to three different other kinds of neurotransmitters who have access to the one language that I developed. And I can dimethyltryptamine. Yeah. I can do that. It's in fact, you can do dimethyltryptamine. You know, okay, if your back is straight,
okay,
and then you start to generate the feeling of that chill. You know how you get a chill?
Yes.
Back here. Uh-huh. That's dimethyltryptamine being released. And it's on the central nervous system. And actually what it's doing is sending a light beam up and down the central nervous system by a bunch of cilia that are going up there. And it's in a very narrow band in the visible light region. And where your pineal gland is, if you can separate and set your body just to the right point, you can actually stimulate the pineal gland. That will set up the neural cavity is a resonant cavity oscillator. You can create true nerve tissue rather than glial cell. Robert O. Becker and I did that experiment to the UW. We had a bunch of doctors, and we did it. It took 4 months to regenerate severed perineal down in the knee.
Interesting.
Because of the viscosity of that thing. And what you're doing is stimulating the pineal gland, and it activates the resonant cavity oscillator. And then if you have trace minerals being, you know, through blue-green algae, whatever, into the body, you can actually make true nerve tissue rather than glial cells.
So this is really a meditation technique.
Yes, it is. Uh-huh. It's in one of my power tools. It's one of the things I train SEALs, how to regenerate nerve tissue.
Well, this DMT is one of the properties that they use in these ayahuasca rituals, right?
Well, stay tuned on Daimy Church and the war going on between the different brujo down there. How spiritual can the current movement be when they're at war with each other?
Yeah.
That's the right thing. Ayahuasca, before it was ayahuasca, was crabgrass and several other sources. You can make, I find it, I guess the way I want to place it, I find it extremely interesting that a very subtle molecule, spirit molecule, you know, Rick Strassman's molecule,
right,
it can be found and the most commonest of plants, crabgrass.
Wow.
That's curious. So it's like chemistry isn't so much about chemistry. It's about a delivery system from God. Dimethyltryptamine, the spirit molecule, is what they call how the brain creates God. gives you a sense of something beyond yourself. You know, like Negative would talk about stick people and there's something beside you that you can't quite see it. Yeah, you get that sense of
something.
All right. That is in Timothy Leary's Neurologic Circuits. It's an extremely important one. The one I was most interested in of the neurologic circuits was lysergic acid amide. That when you connect one dot to another, that realization of that how something works, that is not LSD, which is a toxin, it's lysergic acid amide, which is a counter. You know, when you take LSD, what's basically happening, like ayahuasca, is that you're giving your body a toxin that's related to brain chemistry. And what happens is the brain freaks out, oversupplies. LSD is broken down and in the urine within 20 minutes. And the next 20 hours is your response to your own brain chemistry.
Well, that's intriguing.
Why it's not considered a big drug, you know, in terms of heroin and cocaine and, you know, those schedule ones. I don't know what it all means yet. I was at a rave in Sisters, Oregon, back early a long time ago, and Crystal Method is playing, and a guy named Johnny Appleseed came in from Montana with a bunch of crabgrass. And had this big, I'm going to tell you how to do it. big pot, you know, boiling with water, a campfire under it, boiling like out of a cannibal movie or something. And throw the crabgrass in it, and you bubble it down to the point where half the water's gone, and it's now turning into a black sludge. What you do when it's in this sludge state, half the water's gone, you throw in about 20 lemons.
Ah, okay.
And you titrate the very top off that. It's enough for 60 hits of people to see God. And,
that's great. That's great.
Hey, when Clark Heinrich was there, he had written a book on Amanita. He was shaving people's heads, and then he was boiling Amanita muscarium, bubble, 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 and making Pope's Cradle, where they put the Amanita muscaria on the top of your bald head, and you talk to God like the popes used to.
That's fascinating.
Well, it's, you know, a little bit of true history on what is and is not actually going on.
Yeah. Well, Rick, I just have a couple of questions before we finish the episode, and it's been really outstanding having you here today.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I do want to go into this one thing, which I guess you would call a psychic type of experience. You know, the Russian philosopher Uspensky wrote about it, and he termed it recurrence.
Uspensky.
Yeah.
I know. I'm right familiar with him. Dershy Morgan.
Yeah, what a great book. So basically, recurrence, as he understood it, was like living the same sequence over and over again. And
codependency. Yeah, the never ending.
Yeah, I guess they ripped him off with Groundhog Day, maybe.
Yeah.
But this whole concept about coming back many times, but in the same life to get the lesson right, I think the root actually came from the laws of Manu, which is an Indian text.
I'm familiar with Bill Murray. That was a great movie. Yeah, I know. Get it right. We're essentially doing that right now.
Okay.
That's another metaphor of how I said that I am in contact with my future self, changing my past.
Right.
I don't know how to explain. There's a resonance thing going on here. And I'm in touch with something where I am free-flowing, it just channels through me. I am not premeditated at all. You pretty much get what you get. I'm like a little brat kid.
Yeah.
And there's a sense of continuity, and you feel it. It's not something I can articulate. It's just something you know. And everybody knows what I'm talking about. It's different probably for everybody, but you all get in and out of that place periodically. And the key is to try to keep holding more and more into it. And the more you do, it all of a sudden things start to move in a manner where now you're picking up where you left off in a last lifetime. Aleister Crowley called that magical memory, where you have a connection of what you've been doing all through your past that led you to this moment and what I'm doing right now with you. And once you have that connectivity, a bell rings, gone. And you can go into the voice of the silence, and they talk about the 10 sounds and which level of spiritual development you are by what you're hearing in your right ear. That's called the Shabad, S-H-A-B-D, Gaia, the serpent at the end of the rainbow, the lost chord, zero point energy. It's this sound that you hear. It's an audio. It's not something you say, something you feel, something you hear. Right ear, by the way.
Yeah.
That comes out of the Upanishads, the oldest writings of man. Now, that's part of the meditational programs I do. We're trying to go to hear the sound current, the lost chord. And what happens is when you tap into that, you physically leave your body, and it's not remote viewing, and it's not astral projection. It's called, the third thing, it's called soul travel.
Uh-huh.
What happens is you go home, astral city. You're there for a brief moment. My teacher, Sharon Singh, called it the little death. That's what meditation is, where you turn the mind off and you untie the knot between the soul and matter. And it's a place of relationship to yourself. And that takes a lot of practice. And that's why I've invented power tools, you know, toys that would allow you to enhance and get there quicker. Like, it takes 30 years to get to a bliss state in meditation, but I can get you there in 3 using brain drivers, frequency following function, you know, hemisync, holosync, whatever. There are toys that you can use that will enhance and get you there quicker. The lesson isn't well learned. That part takes doing it and then doing it and then doing it and then doing it, you know, like you do, so that you, like billiards, you get to the place where you're flowing with the way you do what you do. I don't know what else to say at this point.
I see. When you, a guy like Rudolf Steiner in Anthroposophy, which I know you spent some time there,
but
when you think about his version of evolution, in a sense, and how we're supposed to be kind of very consciously evolving and stuff, what did you think?
Evolving, I believe, until the year 3000, of quoting precisely.
Right, exactly. Well, he had this interesting concept of the physical body losing its dominance as the astral body was being built up, and the astral body taking on a larger role.
What do you think the astral body would be in metaphor right now?
Well, it's a really good question. If I had to guess, maybe I'd say it could be the internet.
How about, well, that's the Pony Express.
Well, you're right. You're right, actually.
Yeah, the Pony Express.
Yeah, I guess what I'm driving at is this, you know, an esoteric thought, say like theosophy or anthroposophy, they have a way of looking at reality from a spiritual viewpoint.
Yeah.
So that every practical activity has a spiritual counterpart. So when you're discussing agriculture, you know, I was reminded of the biodynamic farming process that Steiner had engineered and got great results with. And I know that that had a powerful influence on Findhorn, for example. So my question is, did his work on this have any impact on you?
He was a student of my great-grandfather.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I belong to that lodge. With Geiger, another artist.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, Geiger belongs to that same lodge. Yeah, I'm fifth generation. I'm Nelson Line. Steiner's work in agriculture was about sovereignty of self, not about food and growing things, any more than Bill Mollison was in permaculture, and the relationship of stories of plants and the way they relate to each other as a habitat. It's a way of looking at things. Steiner's one, in terms of Waldorf schools and educational systems, I actually mentor for the lodge now.
Great.
I mentor for, I had a friend of mine I mentored, he's at Reed College right now. I have a 12-year-old doing his doctorate at Cornell right this moment in chemistry.
Incredible.
If he's done right, he'll always be like me, a child. I'm a 4-year-old that never became 7. And now I'm this age because of the way my mind works.
I see.
And that's called eidetic learning. And there's Dr. Paul Sheely. And you can check out his works on eidetic learning techniques. It's like Evelyn Woods. There's certain ways you can go about learning something that leave you differently, you know, than so-called state function learning. Like if you are going to take a test and the way you study for a test is cram, then you go into the test all nervous, you'll do better. Oh, if you did it slowly, absorbing it, Ellen, then you want to go into the test because it's state function learning. You learn as you studied it.
I see.
Okay. So I am now, Sheely has got a different thing where what makes me different than a photographic memory is that in some ways it's considered superior because I take snapshots of something. I take a picture of you, file it away, and then I can pull up the picture.
Yeah.
But I took a picture, and then I can pull the picture up later, and I can pick out the detail that I didn't notice at the time I took the picture.
Right.
That's a way that your future is talking to your past and how it changes the past. I mean, talking to the present, changing the past.
Huh.
That's a way of being, like, I have been giving the whole kernel of information. Some of it registered consciously, most of it didn't, and I have access, like a four-year-old.
Fascinating.
It's a technique, and it's a technique, and anybody can learn it. And so if you think I'm gifted, I'm no different than you are. Really, I'm not. I don't feel that. I don't feel superior. I know I don't know.
Well, you've had a lot of interesting experiences, that's for sure. Have you ever been able to bring to bear this mystical understanding that you have with the concept of the alien reality? And would you say that the fascination around the alien question has somewhat superseded the quest for the mystical in modern times? And is that a good thing? Or do we lose sight of these esoteric principles? And can we bring these two together somehow?
But yes, what made us God's favored was that we have choice. And what's happening right now is we're being distracted on what is and is not important. Education. What's important to you? Your family?
Mm-hmm.
Your children?
Sure.
Your education? Education is the one thing you do get to take with you. Why would you want to limit your education when you can get so much more and take it with you?
Sure.
Oh, okay. So once you have that kind of a mindset, realize that there are going to be dark forces, you know, whether they be alien, transnational corporations, Rothschild.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. Got to throw a little sprinkling in there. It doesn't matter. And what made humans special is that the other three genome blood types, you know, A, B, you know, A, is that they are cooperative. And we can take the best of the alien and use it for our own purpose. And that's the part that made us God's favorite. And so the war is distraction between focusing on what we think is important, like money, when in fact, you know, money has nothing to do with your children.
Mm-hmm.
You see, in your relationship to personal friends,
mm-hmm.
that place is where richness lies, not here.
Right.
This is illusion. This is not really real, and it's about to be proven. 3, 2, we're right there, you know. It's about to happen. And as long as you realize that as long you should seek what is important to you and follow the joy, not the money, follow the joy, that's where you're going to have a perfect life. That's how it works. It's as simple as that.
Powerful stuff.
Good. You got me to wrap it up in a metaphysical. I'm impressed. Well, it all brought it back here, good interviewer. I it's important to realize that consciousness is not the one dealing with this whole thing. There's a part of you that's running the show, and you're just along for the ride. And what you're trying to do is form a dialogue so that you can do it flowing rather than kicking and screaming. And I would recommend you start with diaries. You know, a journal. Journal work is a way you form dialogue with yourself.
Mm.
Write your dreams and your feelings and da-da-da. You know, and at some point, that'll get boring. And at some point, abbreviation will occur where a certain thing happens. You know what it means.
Rick, this has been just outstanding. It's great to have you on. And I hope I can get you to come back and do another episode with us.
Absolutely. Yeah, I enjoyed you too. You're actually, for your age, you're actually pretty good.
Thank you. Well, I learned a lot today.
No. I'm slowly, you know, I know what blue square smoke rings are too, so I'm not doing that.
Right, exactly.
Nice talking to you.
It's been terrific. Thank you for being on the show.
You bet.
And we'll talk again soon.
Cool. Nice meeting you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining me for this powerful episode with Dr. Richard Allen Miller on GMO mind control and holographic consciousness. You can find more special reports, interviews, and documentaries at www.darkjournalist.com. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel for the latest videos. See you soon.